understand that the topic is the balance between the success in the world and the love of God, the devotion towards spirituality, and looking after our future in terms of education, finance, and health, and wealth, and money, and so on. Because this runs in our minds. Does it? Is God happy for us to further, say, our education, to do PhD or specialize? Is God happy for us to invest in the proper way and get a lot of income, or it's not proper? If I'm a holy person, love God and serve God, does it mean that I should not think much about investing my money and there's chances? Where's the balance? This is the topic, and I hope that you'll share with me your opinion and your comments. First, it depends on the age. Like, while you are young, you may think in a different way, like when you are old. Because people, when they get older, they realize that they had experience in life that's not important, and it's better for me now to think of my eternity and my future with God forever. But when you are young, possibly it's not stable to say that I'll stop thinking of finance and high achievement and success in order for me to be close to God, because this is not stable. At one stage, you may regret that I didn't do that. So God guides you. But there are general rules. One of the rules is that the love of God and the love of the world, the sum of them is constant. You know, when you studied physics, when you said that the kinetic energy and the potential energy, when you add them together, it's constant. One is increased on the expense of the other. The love of the world and love of God, they are against each other. Like, whenever you love God much, then the love of the world becomes much less. Because you have enjoyment with the Lord to the extent that the enjoyment of the world is not attractive. Like, many people do not have experience of loving God enough that they trample on money in a very easy way. There's a verse that explains this phenomenon by saying that the satisfied soul tramples on honey. When you are hungry, then you can get tempted by food very easily. But when you are satisfied, then the food may not attract your attention because you are not hungry. So your feeling, if you are filled with the love of God, then the love of money will not be that pressure. This is a rule that is very, very important. The more you love God, the more you feel that the world is not attractive. So I may do my job, study, try to get high grades, try to get good job, but really not motivated by strong desire towards success or money, because I'm satisfied with the fact that I am with God. Then why not to stop? Because it may not be stable. Who knows? After a number of years, you may regret. Why didn't I continue? Why didn't I utilize this fact that I could have invested money in the proper way, not for me only, but for the family that I do it. So the balance is depending on the obsession. I'm not obsessed by money. I'm not, and it's evident that if I lose something, I wouldn't be very upset because I have something that satisfies me. So as the love of God grows, the love of the world becomes much less, much less attractive. This is one point that keep it always in your mind, that when you cultivate the desire towards God, then the attraction towards the world will not be that strong. And to lose something from the world is not a great loss for you if you have the love of God. A point like this must be kept always in your mind. Another point that helps us in that direction is the trust that the Lord will never make you need. There are many promises from the Lord. For example, Jesus Christ said, look after the things that pertain to the kingdom of heaven, and these things on earth will be added to you. So I'm not worried. The idea of having a safety net or desire that I should have good bank account just in case in the future I need something important or something can happen that would require a good amount of money to cater for it. This is not true. The Lord can provide protection much more than you imagine. So gradually you develop that trust that I look after the things that pertain to the heaven, kingdom of heaven, and the things on earth will be added to me. There are some promises in the Bible and they are always true. One of the promises came from David, the psalmist, when he said that I was young and now I am elderly. I have never seen a holy person that lacks or his descendants lack. So the Lord will provide. This is very comfortable. This is very comfortable for you to know that there is no risk. I remember Abuna Tadu Saman told us a nice story about that. When he was engineer, at the time that the top profession in Egypt was engineer. So he graduated in the late 60s, at the time that engineering was booming in Egypt because it was the government then was thinking of technology. Then he was ordained as a priest. Then a nice lady came, approached his wife, telling her, what if your husband dies? At that time, there was no superannuation for the priests in Egypt. So simply, if he dies, there's no income for the family. She told him, we have to have our own superannuation. He investigated about that. He found that the contribution is very high. And usually, with priesthood, they cover the needs of the priest very well. There's no priest that is in need. But there is no surplus money. There is not surplus money that he can use to put in superannuation or funds or things like that. Then he couldn't. He told her, we can't. Then she was very upset, his wife. What if happens? Who knows? What will be our future? We have two daughters and myself. She was not working. She's educated, but was not working. And if you die, we'll be in a mess and things like that. Then he was sad, but he couldn't do anything. But he said that, let us trust the Lord that he will cater for our needs. At that time, one nice person gave his daughter a present. His daughter Mary, that is now married to Magdi. He gave her a present of a small amount of money. They take it as a certificate, something like in Egypt. And it was something like 10 cents or something like that. But at that time, the salary of an engineer was $10 a month. So the money that she received was very, very little. And he left it in the bank. But there is like lot, this can win money. And he forgot about this very small quantity of money. He forgot completely about it. Then there was, at the time in Egypt, that there was fight between the Muslim and the Christian, and it was bad. And Abuna Tadus was an outspoken person. He spoke against the system and how the Copts have to have their rights and things like that. And he was reported to the authorities. And he was in trouble. So there was a person that is very scary, type of a person, that dressed in a special, like investigator, looks as secret police or something like that, undercover police, and he stands in front of the church and starts asking about the Abuna Tadus. Then some of the people told him, be careful, they will arrest you. There's a man outside that is after you. Then he escaped from the back door. The second day, he found him standing in front of his own dwelling house. Then he escaped again from another door. He kept escaping, until one day he said, until when this man is chasing me day and night. Then he had a short prayer and went to him and said, I am Tadus. What are you after? He said, the money of in your daughter won 15,000 pounds. And that was the reason that he was chasing him. So the 15,000, he couldn't, he said, what can I do? I leave it in the bank. He left it in the bank, and again he forgot about this 15,000 pound. And he came to Australia, and his daughter grew, and there was a time that she was about to get married. And he needed some money for his daughter, for her marriage. Then he remembered that there was $15,000 in Egypt in her name. So he went to Egypt to get the money, among other reasons to go there. And he went to the bank, and when the bank knew his name, he got him to a very nice air-conditioned room, and the bank manager came to greet him as if he is one of the princes coming from Saudi Arabia, millions, because this 15, you know, the interest rate at one stage in Egypt was 20%, 22%, and the money accumulated to be a huge amount of money. So he got this huge amount of money for his wife and his daughter, and he told her, well, look, one day you were too worried that we don't have superannuation. Look how the Lord can cater for our needs. This is one of hundreds of stories that I heard and experienced in my life and other people's life about how the Lord can look after your finance much better than what you think. So this is another point. Satisfied by the love of God will make the attraction of money not much. Also the trust that the Lord can cater for my needs much more than what the people or my plans can do. Especially that sometimes money can do nothing. For example, in diseases, what can money do? We had a person in our church, very, very rich. His wife developed terminating disease, and she was in her 40s. And he paid unbelievable quantity of money, I think it was $750,000, for arrangement, thinking that this can extend his wife's life, maybe 1 year or 2 years, which happened, but she died. So what money can do? Very little. But the peace that can come even with this is worth more than millions, because we know that the Lord cares and we are in the right direction. The obsession about money is a disease that can occupy your mind to an extent that you can't sleep. You can't sleep. You're always worried about money, what can happen to the money. And I remember when Antonius once told us a story about one of his colleagues that they were, at that time they were studying, students doing medicine, and one of his colleagues, Australian boy, that was very, very rich and very nice looking and very sport man, has a wonderful girlfriend and belonging to a rich family and things like that, and he committed suicide. And the worst thing is that the way he committed suicide is very shocking. His parents opened the door to find him dead. Next to his bed, there was a letter saying, I'm sorry, Mom, I'm sorry, Dad, that I did that to you, but really life is not worth living. I'm not happy. I'm not enjoying any minute of my life. Then I decided to take my life. And that was shocking to everyone, including Abuna Antonius, because he said that this is the dream of any person, to have all what this boy had. He had all the reasons to be happy, but he was not. So we understand sometimes that when you go to visit a monastery or a nunnery or convent, and you see the nuns or monks very happy and very satisfied, it's a puzzle, because they don't have money. They don't have the reasons that people think will produce happiness. They don't have family, they don't have a bank account, they don't have cars, they don't have houses, and they are really happy. So gradually you understand from experience in the church and with holy people that the happiness and the confidence and the peace is not really dependent on the measures of this world. Like many, many times, I remember a long time ago, after I graduated, I was engineer and started doing master's degree, thinking PhD and thinking of academic career. Academic career in Egypt is the highest career. I loved this idea of being a doctor in university and things like that. And in the first page of the daily famous newspaper, in the middle, it was written, a professor commits suicide. That professor I knew, he was young, and he actually committed suicide on the day that a committee approved his application to be given the professorship status. After he succeeded, he committed suicide. And I knew him personally, this person. He was an engineer. And my ultimate hope in life is to be like him, because he was a prolific publisher, scientific papers, and he was promoted very fast, one of the high achievers in Egypt. International figure coming from an Egyptian university and very young. Then it shocked me. That's my ultimate hope, to be like this man. And when he arrived at the top, he committed suicide. Why? Because very likely he found that it's meaningless. That I've been searching to arrive at the top. And once I am at the top, it didn't satisfy me. Actually, many people say this experience is common. To like it happened, for example, with a number of people. I was reading about this operation of the gastro that people do to lose weight, or they have problems with diabetes and things like that, that many of them pass through depression after losing weight. You know why? Because they think that after I lose weight, then I'll be happy. Then discover that they lost weight and they're not happy. Many times you struggle for a goal on earth, whether it is health or finance or money or degrees or position, and once you arrive at it, you discover that it's not really satisfying enough. So this is one thing that will make the balance in your mind. Yes, I can work to be successful. Yes, I wouldn't spare an effort to say, stabilize my finance. Or thank you. David knows that elderly people sometimes need to see it. Thank you, David. So this is a fact that that will help me to understand that this not happens. Some people say that, well, let me establish myself, work very, very hard. Then after one stage, when I achieve everything, then I say enough is enough. This is again a bit of a lie, because sometimes you never find the day that you say enough is enough. Some people are wise that they could do it, but others could not. I said this story to some of you, St. Mark particularly, that I visited an elderly person that was dying, and the family invited me to speak to him. Actually, one of his sons told me, my dad doesn't confess, so try to take his confession because he's dying. I went to there in the hospital and found that the man is, they stopped giving him food or any fluid apart from relaxing water or whatever. He was expected to die within a few days in a hospital, giving him some morphine, that's all. And the sons left the room for me to be with him, to encourage him to confess. And he said, Father, pray for me, because when I get well, I'll go to Egypt. And I have money, and I have a court case. I pray that I'll succeed, because I'll get the money, I start a project. I couldn't say to him, you are dying within 48 hours or maximum 4 days, you'll die. I didn't say anything. The man is very good. He donated a lot in his history. And I knew that his mental power is not working. The morphine is making him hallucinate. And he is an elderly that did very well in his life, and there's no need for him to confess. Yani, what's exactly confession for him? His mental power is not there. So I said that it's not needed for him to confess. He's a good man. He's accumulated good action towards God. And now he's not thinking properly. And I read the absolution from him, and that's it. Then his son came in and said, did he confess? I said, well, look, with your dad, there's no need for confession. Habibi, he's a good man. He is in the way of to heaven. Don't worry. He said, no, he has to confess. Dad, you are dying within 40. So, maybe at one stage you can't realize when to stop. You don't know. When to stop, you don't know. So, maybe when you are young, you can understand that. I remember one day I visited a very wealthy young man, middle-aged man. And he's extremely holy, unbelievably holy man. And Amber Daniel, Bishop of Sydney, was with me. And after we spent some time with this very holy middle-aged man, I said to Sayyidina, my ultimate hope, long time ago, to see this person, a priest. He said, you know that while I was there, that's exactly the same feeling that I had, that this will make a wonderful priest in Sydney. Speak to him. He said, Sayyidina, are you serious? He said, 100%. Sayyidina, I'll speak to him and he'll agree. He said, take my promise that I'll ordain him. Then I went to speak to him. He kept crying like a baby. Tears. The reason is the commitment. He had two houses in Queensland. He had a peaceful shop project there. He's all the place. His finance is all in a mess. He said, there are many people that are living because of this project. What can I do with my children? What can I do with my wife? He was crying. He said that if this invitation came to me some 10, 15 years ago, I would. Now it's too late. He is like octopus in every way. Financially, he can't pull out of it. He's a good person. He supports the churches financially a lot, and he feels that this may be my job is to look after finances of churches but of course this was a hindrance. So the money was for him a hindrance many times. I remember that young man that followed Jesus, and Jesus told him, you need only one thing, go and sell all your possessions, distribute to the poor, carry your cross and follow me. He couldn't, and the explanation in the Bible is that he had great wealth. So the great wealth for him was a hindrance. Many times the wealth is a hindrance. You can't trample on all this wealth. Success also the same. And sometimes you can't stop. You can't stop success. Like, you are driven by success and competition, but you can't slow down. Your type of job is like that. You are a high achiever. And this will continue. I just observed, for example, that some professions, like doctors, for example, once they graduate, they start working, sometimes their success is a trap. Because the very high success that they have will open for them doors of specialization. They work 16 hours a day for 5, 6, 7 years in a very tough competition style. The success makes them do more and more. And then they cool off spiritually. Does it mean that all Copts will not specialize? For example, they wouldn't be a specialist from the Coptic community? Of course not. The Lord will guide some people in different ways. Everyone will have his own way. The Lord will deal with your heart about when is enough, when you can say enough is enough. But the bottom line is that you never cool off spiritually to the extent that you don't have time to let us be more specific to say, where is the limit? The limit for the majority of people, not all, some people can have much higher limit, but the general rule is that you should be capable to pay your tithes, should be capable to have one day off to spend with the Lord, service and attending the church, should be capable to take your family for holidays, say a number of weeks every year. You should be capable to shut off all things of money and plans when you are home with your family, having dinner, spending time with your children, and things like that. If your success would rob you of one of these things that I said, if your success made you invest more and more to the extent that you can't pay your tithes because the money is consumed, you are overburdened by loans and things like that, or if your work is 7 days a week, you cannot spare one day to spend with the Lord in the church, or you have no time for your children to go with them for holiday and with your wife, then I think this is a very, very big mistake. Because happiness will be, like in the old age, if you speak to any elderly person and say, if you become young again, what the changes you will do in your life, normally, they never say more possessions or more degrees. No one will think this way. They'll always think that I'll spend more time with my children, or I'll build stronger relationship with my wife. The business that I was in all the time robbed me from spending any time with the family. And then the end effect is that possibly I got divorced, or I got less comfortable with the children, or I didn't follow the children in their growth, the sweet years that they were, little children that they like to come to dad and or mom and spend with them time. I was very involved in two or three jobs and working on the weekend. This is a big mistake that I didn't have time to pray. And these are the wasted years of my life. I wasted them in thinking of business, and what's the outcome? The outcomes, you'll never sleep on more than one bed. You don't need more than one bed. You never be capable to eat more than what you are eating now. The healthy food is cheap, general. The very rich food is not healthy. The lifestyle of having time will preserve your health. Two famous twin in Egypt. They are famous because they were running the top journal in Egypt. They call it Al-Ahram, the pyramid. They were twin. In the mid-1960s, they were spying against the Egyptian government to American intelligence. And at that time, there was a very strong president in Egypt called Nasser, if you learn a bit of the history of Egypt. And Nasser could discover that they are betrayers, these twin. So he decided to put them in jail. One of them was outside Egypt. He escaped. The one was in Egypt. They caught him. I put him in jail. The one that was put in jail could not smoke there because there's no money to smoke in jail. And the luxury life stopped. He used to work with his hands in jail. And he couldn't have money to drink alcohol. His brother that escaped lived in London in a luxury set up, smoking and drinking and luxury life. There is no work. He has many people to serve him and things like that. The one that was in jail, he ended his term, maybe 20 years or whatever. He got out of jail and he wrote a book. And the book is saying how lucky I was to be in jail because his brother died with a heart attack as expected. I said, the blessing of jail, that I became sporty because I worked by my hand, I stopped smoking, I stopped, and he spoke about how people are deceived. They are Muslims, both of them. But he said that how people are deceived, thinking that money and wealth and prestige can make them happy. I'm much happier that I spend this time in jail compared to my twin brother that lived in fictitious life of luxury, ended his life in worry and in lack of... many, many people have peace because they don't have something to worry about. Like sometimes one of my sons, when he started working, the first day he got the first pay of his work, he returned back from work with a book about 3-inch wide. That under his, he came inside his book that big. His brother was laughing. I didn't understand why he's laughing. I told him, why are you laughing? He said, please, Dad, read the title of the book. And the title was The Share Market. The first pay he got in his life, he got that thick book to study the share market. What's running in the mind of people? I don't know. Yeah. Sometimes we put in our minds plans that will again, because the title is The Balance, the balance is good, that we never ignore a possibility that we do the right thing in terms of success in life, but provided the rules that I'm saying. Not to the extent that you work 7 days. No, never. Not to the extent that you cannot pay the tithes. No, never. Not to the extent that you ignore family life. No, because this will be a cause of regret much more than you imagine. When you feel that my health, not to the extent that there is no sport at all in your life. There is no time to play any sport. You cannot walk, you cannot swim, you cannot ride bikes, you cannot go to the gym. Not necessarily a long time, but at least lifestyle that would allow you to be healthy, to be caring about your children and your family, and definitely about a strong relationship with God that would require you to do something for God, because we cannot live all our lives selfish, just me, without thinking of the church, without thinking of the children of God. I stop at that. If you have any question or comment, Sanoa. Do you have any question or comment or? Yes, start from there.
What about if you have to work, let's say, 7 days for a certain amount of time so that you can actually take, like, let's say you have to work 7 days for a couple of years, and then that, through working that 7-day job, you can take 3 days off a week for the rest of your course. Like, how about
you? Well, a situation like that, you'd be better speaking to a confession father that would supervise that, because the risk is that you wouldn't stop at 1 or 2 years. You may continue, especially if success sometimes is a trap. The high income sometimes is a trap. You feel that the money is coming, then when can I stop? When will I say, now it's the time? You need guidance, you need confession father that would follow that with you and telephone you every now and then to ask about how is things going, and you obey him when he says enough is enough. Seldom to find yourself in a situation like that. Seldom. Really, what's going to happen? What can happen if I... Why this rush to finish things very, very fast and very early? Why? Yeah, what's the difference between finishing things in 2 years or 3 years? Especially people who are doing, say, postgraduate research or studies or degrees. What's the difference of doing it very fast or very slow? Not very slow, but normal pace. The normal pace is the pace that allows you to go to the church. Because this is the stability. The worst thing is that sometimes we cool off. Like, when we stop being in touch with the church and with the Lord for a number of successive years, we may never come back. We'll cool off. I remember a boy, he was at that time in year 11, and that matched my first year in priesthood, came to me and said that, "I have a girlfriend." I said, "What do you mean by girlfriend?" He said, I mean all the bad things. She's living with me as wife and husband. Then I said, "How about your family?" He said, "My family are grieving. They are modern people, and they don't mind." "So you are in year 11, and you have de facto wife?" He said, "Yes." "Can I have Holy Communion?" I said, "You can't. Marry her." He said, "I can't marry her." "Why?" "Because of the finance, we didn't graduate." He said, David, how many minutes are you?
It's 2 to 3, we have the room to 4, so
5 minutes more.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Bye-bye. So, I didn't know what to do. Should I allow this person to have Holy Communion? Of course not. I told him, "Speak to your parents to marry her. No matter how young you are de facto living together." He said, "Yes, but I can't. I have to buy whatever, any rubbish ideas." Well, I told him, "You can't have Holy Communion." He said, "Then I can't come to the church." He said, "Come to the church, attend meetings, attend Bible study, but don't have Holy Communion." He didn't. Then after a number of years, he graduated, and he came and said, "Now, if you like to baptize her, she's Australian, and we can get married." I did. Baptized her, tried hard, visited them a number of times, and things like that, and they got married. But after that, they never came to the church. The reason is the years. The years that he was very enthusiastic about his relationship with God when he was in the high school. But the years that passed away from the church, away from Holy Communion, made him cool off. And that's the worst thing that can happen. You say that I'll work hard this number of years, then I'll finish and then revive spiritually. It may not happen. Did it happen with people? Yes, some people did. I recall one person in his mid-50s. He was a very successful businessman. And out of his decision, enough is enough, he stopped all his work. And he lived 20-odd years in the church. Every day he comes to the church, not at St. Mark Church, another church. He brings every day Urban. Abuna there made for him in his kitchen at home a special oven for Urban. And he brings Urban every day. He puts on Tonya like deacon. He serves in the church. He actually did every possible service in the church, cleaning, making copies of CDs and things like that, praying the Mass daily, and he lived a very, very holy life, a quarter of a century, 25 years almost, and he died in a very peaceful way. But this was one of stories that I saw, a person that was very, very busy in the world, and then a wonderful decision came to his mind in his mid-50s, and then the rest of his life, he passed away late 70s in his life, and all his life was for the Lord. Lucky is that person to have this determination. But unfortunately, many people cool off. So it's not a wise idea to say, "Let me establish myself, finish whatever, I do whatever. Then after that, I stop and return back to service of God." May not be the case. One thing that I observed, that there is no person that sacrificed the world for sake of God and regret it. Never. God is very rich, not only financed, but in controlling our happiness. You know that happiness is gift. Some people are happy for nothing. Some people can be very joyful for no reason, not real reason, but they are happy. This is in the hand of God, sometimes also in the hand of the devil, to make you inclined in a certain direction to be happy or unhappy by derived from the devils, and definitely the Holy Spirit can make that. The disciples were always happy even when they were persecuted. Even they are happy at the instant of their martyrdom, they are happy. So the Lord can do that to you. Concerning the next generation, because it's a lie, big lie from the devil, you should secure the future of your children, you should secure the future. It's not true. It's not true. The security of the future of your children is in the hand of God. When you get married and have children, enough to make them close to God, and then they are secure. Their future will be good. Don't worry, because God is honest. He wouldn't let you down in something important to you, like seeing your children happy and successful and so on. The idea of marriage. Who will agree with me to marry me if I'm not having, say, a good status financially? This is again another mistake. The first house maybe that I visited as a priest in Sydney was a house that I can only see in movies, this type of luxurious houses. A man came and invited me, gave me the address. I went to there. I was too. I've never been in a luxury house like that. And I stayed there, read the Bible. And when I left, I had water to sprinkle. Then I observed that the house is two sections, one section for the man and one section for the woman. And at the door, the man told me, "Did you observe?" I said, "Observe what?" He said, "Observe that we are separated." I said, "I'm sorry to hear that." He said, "We have business. We cannot declare that we are divorced. So we are not divorced, but we are separated. She has her own and I have my own. They are living in misery and the wealth beyond the limit." So sometimes this idea is a fake. It's really a mirage that you think something that I'll arrive at, and it ends by no happiness. In God, there is great happiness, there is no doubt. There is a promise that in His presence there is joy. Sometimes we have that. When you serve, say, like a number of years ago, we had two groups of people in two youth excursions. It's actually overseas travel. Group went with Abuna Augustinus, and the other group rejected to be with the priest. I asked them why. "We don't like this, yani under pressure, everyday prayer. We like to have a bit of holiday." So they went to another place. The group that were with Abuna Augustinus, they used to send the messages from there. The joy is clear in their words, how happy they are. The best days in our life, they are. They enjoyed every minute of it. The other group had fights from the first day. Half of them were in hospital with food poisoning. Problem after problem. It's very clear that the group that had this joy with Abuna, just that they were praying every day, they have masses and Bible study. They still enjoyed the time. They still had fun. They still went to the beaches and they had great time. But God was there. So in the presence of God, there is joy. And it's a matter of trust and experience. Yani, people had that experience. Yani, remember your days, you yourself, the days that you are close to God. Remember how sweet they are, how peaceful. You sleep with joy. You have that confidence. And remember also the day that you drifted away from God, how miserable, regardless of having money or having the reasons that other people assess to be reasons for heaven. We saw that many times. We saw people, especially when they are drunk. When we see people drunk, they speak the truth. Many of the ones that you think that they are happy because of their lifestyle, when they are drunk, listen to what they say. The misery, the desire to commit suicide, the desire to finish their life. Why? Just being away from God. Because He is our creator. He knows our system. He knows how to make us happy. We enjoy His company. And enough to have that confidence that you are not going to be let down. There are people that know that. No, God will never let me down. Imagine that feeling, that confidence. If something goes wrong, according to the assessment of the world, you know that it's not. It's to my favor. If I apply for a job, I don't get it, I'm happy. Because I know that the Lord is preparing something better for me. If I even get sick, then I say it's good for me to be sick, to learn something new. Possibly I need to be quiet a little bit and think of my spiritual life or my future. So whatever happens to you, it ends by happens. So it's not money, it is not success, it is not degrees that will make you happy. It is the relationship with God, definitely. That will make. The exact balance in your life, the Lord gave us in the Coptic Church, something called confession, to be something very, very useful. The very fact that you find someone listening to you, analyzing situation with you, in the fear of God, and he has no purpose other than to please God and please you, then there's a chance for you to set rules about, should I start further things or not? Should I do it now or not? Should I specialize? Should I start this extra project? I am invited to a work on the weekend. Should I take it? What's my purpose? But trust God. And just tell you one more story and I finish. It was actually a person that came from Asia and he had very limited resources financially. And he knew a girl and they decided to get married, but he had no money. He was working very hard to start, establish something, I mean, for his marriage. And then he used to confess with me at that time, and he came and said that, I resign. I said, why? He said, I'm working in a place. He was working as a waiter in a restaurant. And it's a very strange type of restaurant that they employ girls and they force them to dress in a certain way to attract people. And it was very, very hard for him to live among almost naked girls all the time. I said, do you have another job? He said, no. I need money, but this is causing me lack of... I don't feel... I can pray. I don't feel that I'm in an environment that is healthy spiritually. He resigned. I was worried about him. In a very, very short time, he got another job, almost doubled the salary. And to me, I said, that's it. That's it. And it gave me that feeling. I also remember cases like this happen all the time, that you reject something that looks as if it gives you happiness, trusting God, and God will never let you down in that aspect. It's impossible to make sacrifice for sake of God, and this will not be reflected in a way that pleases you to the extent that you know very well that, because it's private number, just tell them that you always know that that God is honest and reliable. I saw that number of times in a relationship between boys and girls. Like a girl, for example, that declines an offer from a man that looks that any other girl would love to have a relationship with him. Her drive is that he will take her away from God. And this type of girls usually end in a wonderful marriage. The boy is the same. A girl that looks very attractive, whatever, but she's driving him away from God. Then he rejects this relationship. Usually, it ends by 100-fold. God is willing to pay back 100-fold if you sacrifice wealth, position, money, status for his name's sake. Glory be his name forever. Thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you. It's wonderful that the Coptic people gather at uni, speaking together, spiritual matters. It's really... blessing. Not many nationalities do that. Not many doctrines do that. Thanks to the Chinese also. Once I was invited to one university, I think it was Sydney University, and it was lecture theater like that. And I thought it is the Coptic place because the Coptic people used to have it. So I entered, and all of a sudden I found that I'm in a Chinese Bible study. So I was too embarrassed to leave. I had to sit 5 minutes or so. And it was one of the best experiences in my life. Very holy people. So I said, glory be to God, that everywhere, in every nation, in every place, the same feeling. The Holy Spirit touches the hearts in the same way. You find them the way they pray, the way they love each other. These are additional evidence that when we love each other, we pray together, it's not social thing. It's not culture. It is the Holy Spirit that combined us together. Thank you. Pray together. Our Father, if the group would like to have any excursion or something like that, then please send Mark servants sharing that. We can provide buses, we can provide food or something like that. If the group would like to do any activity.
Thank you.